Good morning, and welcome to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Mach, Calvin Butenhoff, coming to you live from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. Thank you so much for joining us. You can always call or text at 844-967-2789-844-96-PARTY. Or leave a message on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very, very busy Monday show coming your way. Coming up at 10:30, UW Madison, PJ Leash, he's an entomologist and heads the Insect Diagnostic Lab. And we're going to be talking about, there's an invasion of bugs coming.
Liberal women bugs.
Caravans of liberal women bugs.
Caravans of liberal women bugs, now, and they're coming to take your job.
Even scarier than that, it's like the 17-year cicadas are coming to southeastern Wisconsin.
I'm confused, and I will ask him this. I feel like we're always expecting the cicadas, and like, they haven't been here in 16 years. I'm like, they were here like 2 years ago.
While there are different sites, we're going to find out. Save these questions for the bug guy.
No, Jane.
He'll be here at 10:33. Find out if we need to get, I don't know, cicada shovels or exactly how bad this is going to be. We're going to be shoveling cicadas once the invasion begins.
He's on at 10:30.
Okay. All the details coming up. At 11:33, joining us in studio, really excited about this. She's the president of Sharp Literacy. Linda Welsh will be here along with Chef Morgan Perry to talk about their Unwrapped fundraiser that is coming up this Sunday. It's a bunch of local chefs who have to take McDonald's items and turn them into something else. So like eggs and sausage, and you have to use the ingredients that you would find in McDonald's and then make something else from that.
Do you think any of them are like, they took like a McMuffin and a Big Mac and a pancake and they're like, a Tesla.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
just as reliable. Oh, I said it.
Oh.
I'm spicy today.
Said it out loud already. Well, kicking things off, big news this morning. Governor Evers has signed into law new maps. Here he is from his press conference this morning. Calvin, if you'd hit that clip, please.
Wisconsinites want fair maps, and Wisconsinites deserve fair maps. So today, Wisconsinites, I'm enacting fair maps for the great state of Wisconsin. Let's go! This will be the first time in over 50 years that Wisconsin will have fair legislative maps enacted through the legislative process rather than through the courts. These maps will take effect immediately after publication and will be in place for the fall elections, providing certainty for candidates and campaigns that are gearing up to circulate nomination papers for this spring. I will also be asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to clarify that these maps will be in place for any special elections that occur between now and the fall.
Governor Tony Evers, from about an hour ago, signing into law new legislative maps for the state of Wisconsin. Good thing, bad thing? Do we still expect hanky-panky?
The hankiest of
pankies. The hankiest of pankies? Chime in if you think this is a good deal or a bad deal. 844-967-2789. You can call, you can text, you can leave a comment on the live stream as well. Story in the Associated Press says Democrats are almost certainly to gain some seats in the state assembly and the state senate under the new maps, which will be again in place for the November election. The GOP has been operating since 2011 under maps they drew that have been recognized as among the most gerrymandered in the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, we had Dan Schaefer on last week for our weekly recombobulation last Friday.
Right.
And we talked to him about the whole, I don't want to say conspiracy theory, I would say the fear that the reason why the Republicans voted for it was because that, one, they do not want the Supreme Court of Wisconsin making their maps. And also because they wanted to throw them right into court to stop them, to freeze them essentially. And Dan brought up some good points, one of them being, well, then what maps do we operate on? Because the old maps are unconstitutional.
Are gone. They're gone.
We have no maps at this point.
Right.
So we would have to have something. The other thing I brought up, and I thought about this over the weekend, and I, you know, if you are a judge, unless you are the most agreeable judge with the GOP side. You still shouldn't be thinking like that, but still can't change it. If I'm a judge and a lawyer for the Wisconsin Republicans came to me and said, we want to challenge these maps, my first question to them would be, if they were so challenging, why did you vote for them almost unanimously? Why was it such an overwhelming vote in favor of, if you had such a problem, why didn't you go to your colleagues and talk about it and fix them, as we've all seen you've been trying to do for the past few months? So that's another thing. So I'm thinking less and less they might go to court, because I don't think they'll stand up. I mean, I'm not a judge, I'm not a lawyer, but it just seems like to me that Dan gave me some good thinking.
Some faith.
Yeah.
A little faith in the process.
Yeah.
Well, certainly I think we can all understand why there might be some skepticism among some that the Republicans are acting in good faith. This from a Cap Times article from earlier, quoting State Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee. Forgive me for speculating, because this has been happening repeatedly for the last 14 years. Republicans will make every attempt after this is passed to continue to try and prevent the public from actually being represented in this legislative body and in the state assembly. But again, Governor Evers, and it was a very, very long press conference this morning, and I didn't want to feel that we needed to listen to the entire thing. But he did say, we've been building that. We've been working towards this for a very long time. People want this. Wisconsinites want this. And Wisconsin residents don't want their elected officials choosing their voters.
Mm-hmm.
Voters should be able to choose their elected representatives.
Yep. It's about time that politicians and would-be politicians, regardless of the party you belong to.
Yes.
You got to work for those votes. You got to talk to the people. You got to show them why you deserve their vote. Knock on those doors, make those phone calls. You can't just sit back, kick your Converses up on the desk and say, well, unopposed.
I'm good.
I'm good to go. So
I'm locked in.
This will be interesting. One where it will lead our elections over the next few cycles. Because as Dan also has said, none of these maps favor a Democratic landslide.
Never did.
In fact, the maps that Governor Evers proposed gave the Republicans a slight edge, and that's just the mathematics of it all. But it will be interesting to see where our Wisconsin elections go in the next few cycles, over the next few years, especially with the presidential election coming up. Those conspiracy theorists, no matter what happens, this will just be another piece of kindling on the fire, but also to see how this decision will affect other states too. Because other states have been throwing away their maps as well.
Yes.
But they've still had their eyes on us because, man, embarrassing. Like, violating our state constitution and doing nothing about it, embarrassing. So
844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Dave from Waukesha texting in, I think Wisconsinites can pat themselves on the back for getting more balanced legislative maps. We showed up in the booth last spring and elected a Supreme Court justice who ruled the old maps were gerrymandered. We elected a governor who created more balanced maps. Now we can elect state legislators who are more fair in their policy development. And I go back to, again, Wisconsinites just want lawmakers who are going to respond to their concerns.
Yeah.
And so I'm sorry, guys, but you're going to have to start emptying out those full mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
When people try to call and leave you a message, you might actually have to, I don't know, pick up the phone.
You can't
talk to your constituents. Yep. Oh, no.
You can't just walk past your front desk and say, well, have a good Friday. Nope, you have messages.
Yeah.
Lots of them. And Dave brings up a really good point. Not just the overwhelming election of Justice Janet Prosewicz, but let's not forget the numbers with which she was elected. Overwhelming.
Oh, massive.
So that wasn't just Democrats voting for her.
No.
That was a message to the electorate. That was a message to the state, to the country who was watching us. But the other thing too is, if you look at the past few elections, you know, the spring election of 2020, where they took all of Milwaukee County's polling places and made them into five with COVID.
Right.
You know what we did? We stood in line and we voted. When you make it harder, people will overcome. And that's what we've seen year after year. When you try to make it, whether it's you're stripping away voting rights, endorsing voter ID, people if you get the information out, they're going to stand up, they're going to go to their polling place, they're going to fill out their ballot, and they're going to make their voice heard every single time.
Well, do you remember some of the photos from the 2020 election?
I have some of them, yeah.
With people standing in line for hours and hours and hours. And there was one young woman who had a sign, what she had on her sign escapes me, but it just made me so proud to see how much people appreciated how important it is to cast your vote. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this last week when we talk about gun safety measures. This is how we affect change, my friends. You vote, and you vote in every single election.
Yep.
Even if it's not sexy.
No, and most of them are not.
No, they're not.
But the least sexy are some of the most important.
Absolutely. Texter from the 608 says, hopefully with the new maps, things will get better, but I put nothing past the Wisconsin GOP and the Bradley Foundation for shenanigans. In a logical world, this would be the end of it. But with Republican judges, you just can't be too sure. I certainly understand the skepticism and the suspicion. Hopefully, this is a good faith effort. And Greg, I think you made a really good point in saying if the Republicans would now try and take this to a judge and say, we don't like these maps. And the judge can just say, but you all voted for it like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean,
Andrew, so where's your argument?
Andrew from Maine says the GOP, and this is true, can now claim they worked for fair maps when they campaigned. They can.
Yeah, they can.
Just like Robin Voss can say, hey, I introduced marijuana legalization.
And it got shot down.
Exactly. And he asked the question, are these maps for state districts or do they also change House of Rep districts? I think that the maps, I think the maps do have some sort of effect.
On both.
On both. But that's more, the rep is more population, so I'm not positive about that.
Dan Schaefer will be here to break it down, I'm sure, a little bit more thoroughly when he joins us on Friday at the recombobulation area. But we'll still taking your calls and your texts at 844-967-2789. New maps in Wisconsin, good or bad. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. If you are listening on WLAK.
Where?
Lake Air.
In?
Amory.
Amory, Amory, Amory.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can always call or text at 844-967-2789. Or leave a comment on live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon has ruined. Big news this morning, Wisconsin Democratic Governor Tony Evers signing new legislative district maps into law on Monday. Democrats hailing it as a major political victory, where Republicans have been in control for more than a decade, even as Democrats won 14 of the past 17 statewide elections. Good thing, bad thing? Are we confident that this isn't going to go unchallenged and that they will actually go into effect? I did see one comment this morning on Twitter that I found interesting. Someone had mentioned that it was just last week that a number of Democrats voted against these maps.
Yeah.
Some of the same Democrats were there this morning as Governor Evers was signing them, and they're applauding and cheering and said, you know, how do you explain that? Well, all I can say is look back to Lindsey Graham saying, if we elect Donald Trump, we will be destroyed and we'll deserve it. You can look back at Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, any number of Republicans who had far different things to say about Donald Trump than they do today. So,
yeah,
not just one side flipping and flopping.
No, and there's far more people too have done the same thing over time. And who is it? J.D. Vance, Tim Scott, they all love him so much. And yeah, we didn't invent the flip-flop, people.
No, we did not. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Andrew from Maine texting in, does this change the areas of Wisconsin which can download the Civic Media app for free and listen to great local programming like Matt and Aaron on Air or the Maggie Dawn Show, which starts next Monday, by the way?
I feel like...
No, you can... Anywhere you are in the state, in Wisconsin, actually anywhere in the globe, yeah. I guess, you could download the Civic Media app.
Do you know where else they could download it? The International Space Station.
What?
If they have Wi-Fi on the International Space Station, which I'm sure they do.
They could download our app.
They could download our app, and they could listen to us in space.
Very cool.
Oh, my gosh. This changes everything.
844-967-2789. New maps, good, bad. Are you uncomfortable? Are we still thinking, again, there's going to be some trick? Some trick.
Tony Zimmerman says the Civic Media app is all caps global.
We are global.
Yes, we are.
There's Jeff also on the live stream. I'm hopeful, but I still don't trust the sneaky popcorn guy.
Excuse me, that's Sneaky Popcorn King. Show some respect to the throne.
I understand that.
Absolutely.
I understand that, Jeff, and I think a lot of people feel the same way, but we can at least say, and I think Governor Evers can say this going forward, is I said I would sign them if they got approved, and I did. I stuck to my word. I gave you my word, and I did.
So far, Tony Evers, keeping that word and doing things. Kicking butt, taking names, signing for maps. You realize if he and Tammy Baldwin, like, they would be unstoppable. The amount of stuff they get done for this state.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Like, that just popped into my head right now. We weren't even, that'd be amazing.
Well, and we were talking last week about Hovde, Eric Hovde now.
Wisconsin landowner.
Is expected to announce this week he will be running against Tammy Baldwin. And I still don't know how they're going to go at her unless they just call her a Marxist, socialist, communist, feminist or something. How do you go after her? She's done a lot of good things for Wisconsin. She has brought a lot of money here, not only for the bridge in Superior, but for our veterans, for our farmers. Tammy has really accomplished a lot. So again, what the plan of attack is going to be against her, I think will be very interesting.
He made the announcement. He's officially running.
Oh, it is official.
2 days ago, he made that announcement. And, you know, I feel like if he was taking it very seriously, he would have been deeper into it by now. He would have announced by now. But he's tried this before, and he's lost. And I'm going to keep calling him what he is he's a Wisconsin landowner, Wisconsin property owner. He's not a Wisconsinite. And we talked about this morning, he threw his hat in the ring from California. He's not a Wisconsinite. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in and goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home. You don't belong here because you don't spend time here. You don't get us.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Yeah, and it's not even like good Kringle either. It's the kind of Kringle it's like fast food Kringle.
No, it's all, you got to have the good Kringle.
I'm not.
If we're going to give that as the payoff, then it's got to be a good Kringle. the pecan one is good.
Sure, okay.
844-967-2789. When we return, we're going to be talking about bugs. PJ Leash is going to be here. He's the head of the UW-Madison Diagnostic Lab, Insect Diagnostic Lab. And there's a cicada invasion that's coming our way. We'll find out about other creepy crawlies. It's been a really, really mild winter.
Oh,
it will be very interesting to see how this is going to affect what we're going to be dealing with, you know, later on in spring and certainly into the summer.
We're not getting more snow, I think.
We might get a late one.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be anything that's going to stick around. It's going to be 51 degrees on Wednesday.
Yeah. And before we know it, like a week from today, it's March, basically.
Yep. Essentially. And then coming up at 11:33, we are going to be learning all about Unwrapped. Very exciting fundraiser for Sharp Literacy. We are going to have the president of Sharp Literacy, Linda Welsh, and Chef Perry, Morgan Perry, rather, are going to be stopping in studio to tell us about this fundraiser that is happening this coming Sunday in Waukesha. Pretty cool. If you want to go, you can help raise money for a very worthy cause and taste some very unique creations.
You had me at taste.
Taste was all you needed.
Speaking of taste, when we had Derek Mosley here last week, you and I really need to get on this dinner thing they do every month.
Oh, yes.
Because I'm tired of missing it. And I want to hang out with Judge Mosley because I love eating and I love him.
We'll work on that.
Yes.
Stay close. We have news. We have an entertainment update with Pete Schwabe, which I love. He's a lot of fun. Great show. You should check it out every weeknight from 7 to 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin the Board Lord, coming to you from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can always join us at 844-967-2789. What are you all excited about, Greg Bach?
Calvin, what's the name of that song?
He's got to get his phones on.
Yeah.
That song is Just Another Day by...
Who?
John Cicada.
Nicely done. Nicely done. That leads directly to our guest. He is officially, his official title is director of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. We prefer to call him our bug guy. PJ Leash is here. Good morning, PJ. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be invaded. Do I need a shovel for cicadas or what's going to happen with the great cicada invasion of 2024?
Yeah, so this is something that's going to get a lot of attention this year. We've already been hearing stories. I was planning for this for really a couple years because we know it occurs every 17 years.
Right.
And I was thinking my life will be busy in April and May and June, but I've already done probably 5 or 6 media interviews on this topic. So it's a big story. One thing, though, is for the 17-year cicadas, if you look at some of the older maps, it kind of shades in all of southern Wisconsin, which gives you the impression that we're just going to be overrun, you know, the lower two rows of counties, which just isn't quite the case. We will see them in the state, but our 17-year cicadas, they tend to be restricted to very specific spots on the map.
Oh, interesting.
And this is where they have historically been. And one thing to know about cicadas is they really feed on tree roots. And so you get a local population. And over time, I mean, imagine they come out in a given spot 1 year. And 2 years later, that grove of trees or that orchard is plowed under to put up apartments or parking lots or whatnot. Those cicadas will basically fizzle out because they don't have what they need to survive. So over time, they're probably shrinking slowly. But we do have some spots on the map where we're going to see these. But again, it's not widely distributed. It's more of individual pins on the map, so to speak.
So which lucky communities in southern Wisconsin are going to be invaded by cicadas?
Oh, gosh. So if you wanted to pick the single best spot to see these in the entire state, the spot that comes up again and again in news stories and reports and sightings, is Lake Geneva area. And some of the reportings I've seen, it's more on the north side of the lake. There's some nature preserves there. But if you wanted to see them and experience this phenomenon, which is going to be really cool. I mean, when you think about 17 years of CADIS, in a given Wisconsinite's life, that might be what, five?
Maybe.
Or so chances to ever see these?
Yeah.
I've never seen them in my life
you
before.
You haven't.
I have not. I'm from southeastern Wisconsin. I moved to Madison for entomology graduate work in 2007 when they were popping out, but I missed them that time. So this is going to be my first time seeing them. But Lake Geneva area in about mid-June, if you wanted to see them, that's going to be the spot to go. There's some other spots, Beloit, Janesville, a couple of spots along the Wisconsin River in southwestern Wisconsin. We get them like Prairie du Chien area and spots like that. Spring Green area, we see them. But again, they're not going to be super common everywhere. But if you're in the right spot, they're going to be very, very abundant.
If you are just joining us, PJ Leash is our guest. He's the director of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, also known as the Bug Guy. And we're talking about the 17-year cicadas that are going to be popping out in some areas of southeastern and southwestern Wisconsin. So, PJ, since you've never actually seen this yourself, are you going to like be camping by some trees in Lake Geneva with your family, just waiting for them to crawl out of the ground? What are you going to do?
Oh, not quite. I've got two little kids at home, so I can't quite do that. But and summer is also the busiest time for me at the diagnostic lab. But I'm tentatively planning to probably drive over someday in mid-June or so just to experience these. Get out there, record some audio clips, see some, maybe collect some specimens for outreach and educational purposes. But that's what I'm planning. Probably a day trip to see these.
A day trip. What can people expect for, I mean, this isn't the same thing. I've seen other mayflies and things like that when communities get inundated with mayflies. I mean, are these going to be dropping out of trees and onto people? What kind of impact is this going to have for folks who live there?
Yeah, so if you happen to live in a spot where these are out, it's going to be very, very loud for a while. And when the adults emerge, they're going to be active for about a month before they die. And during that time, they're making this noise. It's really the males are producing sound to attract the females for mating purposes. The females can also make a little bit of a noise, but it's really the males that are making all the loud noise. And it can be 70 to 80-ish decibels, which is similar to like a vacuum cleaner, loud traffic, often loudest in the evening. So if you live in those areas, if you were planning like an outdoor wedding, barbecue, graduation party, things like that,
it don't
a problem. So you might need to relocate those sorts of things indoors or figure something out. That's going to be about the biggest thing that they can do, is maybe a little bit of a noise complaint. Otherwise, they're pretty harmless. They don't bite, they don't sting. Technically, they do a little bit of damage to plants. So after they mate, the females have a structure called an ovipositor. That's an egg-laying device. And theirs looks like a spear under the microscope. So they actually take that and they'll slice into twigs and small branches. And that can actually kill off the ends of twigs. Now, if you're a big tree, if you lose the tips of twigs, you're fine.
It's no big deal.
From a distance, you and I would see some brownish leaves in the trees, but those trees are fine in the long run. There could be a concern, though, if you lived in a cicada hotspot and you just planted a tree or a shrub in your yard, and those get dinged by the cicadas laying eggs, and you're losing 8 to 12 inches of twigs here and there. That's a pretty big percentage of the overall canopy of small trees. So it really doesn't make sense to spray for these, but what I've been telling folks is, if you have a small tree or shrub or something like that that you're concerned about, get some fine mesh netting and simply cover those plants for about 3-4 weeks while the cicadas are active. That will physically keep them off those plants.
So PJ, a couple of things. First of all, we actually had on the live stream, Sherry had a question for you. She says, what happens if your dog eats one? My dog hates bugging and eats them. are they harmful to pets? Are they harmful? I mean, what happens if it lands in your mouth? Who knows? It's craziness. But are they harmful for animals if they eat them?
In general, no. And in the last decade or so, we've seen some really big cicada emergences like Brood 10 a few years back. And in general, the cicadas are, they're not toxic or anything like that. In theory, if you do some Google searching, yeah, whenever there's a big cicada emergence, you start seeing recipes pop up.
No.
Some folks have even created cookbooks about these. Well, and here's something to think about, though. So if you go to the grocery store or you go to a restaurant, most folks are not very keen on entomophagy. That's the consumption of insects, yeah, but they're relatively high in protein, some good fat, some fiber.
Yeah.
You and I would pay a lot of money to eat shrimp or lobster or crab legs. Those creatures are also arthropods. They're very closely related to insects. So we may be squeamish.
I don't want to hear your logic.
He's not, Greg's not, Greg's not going to buy this, PJ.
So there, if you go on Google, there are some recipe books I've seen out there for folks frying cicadas and stuff like that. But the short answer is, you know, if a dog eats them or something like that, they're really pretty harmless. You know, if your dog is chowing down on them for hours and hours, that might not be a good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, dogs eat too much of anything. And that might be
That's a really good point.
And the other thing I had to question, because when Jane brought this up, I am not an entomologist. I know very little about bugs. So please forgive what will be a very elementary question. I feel like we talk about cicadas every year. Do we so there's a cycle coming now. Is there possible for a cycle to show up next year that is a different 17 year or shorter or longer period? I just feel like we talk about cicadas every summer and people are always and mentioning, oh, you can hear them, like,
but you can always hear them.
Yeah, like I thought they were only supposed to be here every like few years. Like, so that's it's not so much a question. I'm just like, what the heck?
Yeah. Well, so to clarify that very briefly, there's lots of different types of cicadas here in Wisconsin, the upper Midwest. We do see them every year, but usually what we call those are our dog day cicadas because they pop out in the dog days of summer, hot end of July, right, August.
That sound you hear?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The loud, it sounds like someone's using a buzz saw or something like that. Those we see every year. Those have like a 2 to 3 year life cycle, but they have overlapping populations. So we always see those. The periodical cicadas are either, most of them are 17 year, some are 13 year cicadas. And those pop out at these very regular intervals. Scientists have actually categorized them into groups or cohorts that we call broods, which are issued Roman numerals. Just helps us keep track of things. And so what we're talking about this year is brood 13 periodical cicadas, which have a 17-year cycle. So they last popped out 2007, before that 1990. And after this year, it'll be, I think, 2041, if I'm doing my math correctly. So those particular ones pop out at these very long intervals. But with all the different broods around the U.S., if you go online, there's some color-coded maps from U.S. Forest Service that'll tell you when and where different broods are popping out next around the U.S.
PJ, so is this particular brood, are they just lazy?
I mean, you just made it political somehow. I don't know how you did that.
No, but they waited for 17 years. It's like, what are you guys doing, for pity's sake? Come on.
Yeah, and there's a couple potential reasons for that. So they emerge at these very long time intervals. And also when they emerge in these very, very large numbers. And a couple things can be going on. If you emerge in really high numbers, that could be a survival strategy, because even though some of you are going to be eaten by birds, there's going to be plenty more to mate and perpetuate the species. So that's one thing that can be going on. But also by emerging at either 13 or 17 years, depending on the species, it's really hard for predators to pick up on that. If you are an insect that emerges in large numbers, say every year, every 2 years, you know, we might see some cycling of predators that pick up on that. But every 17 years, it's a prime number. It's very hard for things to catch on because a lot of our vertebrate predators are relatively short-lived, a matter of maybe a few years or something like that.
That's so interesting, and that makes so much sense. It's like, I mean, the bears in Alaska know when the salmon are running, right? So they go back year after year after year, and you develop that knowledge that sticks with you. But I'm sure they live a lot longer than than, you know, birds and things that are eating cicadas. But that's fascinating.
I just imagine now predators going, wait, was it last year? Is it? When is it? It was sometime.
I'm so confused.
We'll come back next summer.
I'm so confused. PJ, do you have time to hang around for another segment?
Oh, sure.
Great. Steven from Green Bay, I see you on the line. If you have a question for PJ Leash, please give us a call, shoot us a text, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We're talking about the impending cicada, 17-year cicada brood popping in the middle of June, somewhere around Lake Geneva and other parts of southwestern Wisconsin. This is a great conversation. Don't go away. This is Matt Nair on air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Board Lord Calvin coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Our guest is UW Insect Director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at UW-Madison, also known as the Bug Guy. He's PJ Leash, and we're talking about the arrival this summer of the 17-year brood of cicadas.
Brood 13.
Brood 13. Waiting 17 years. Steven from Green Bay has been waiting. Thank you, Steven. What did you want to ask PJ?
I actually have a couple questions for him. The first question is, I live in Green Bay in northeast Wisconsin, and I was wondering if there's any chance I could experience these bugs locally or if I had to drive halfway across the state to see them. And can you shine any light on how bad the mosquito population is going to be this year? Because let me tell you, last year it was so bad that they literally were flying in swarms. There's just black swarms flying around the town of Green Bay last year, and it was unbearable. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Yeah, so the first question, will you see them in Green Bay? Unfortunately, no. When you look at where this particular group of cicadas is, Brood 13, it's really some isolated spots in far southern Wisconsin, maybe the first two rows of counties in the state. About the farthest north I've seen them is southern Sauk County. So just northwest of Madison a little bit. Otherwise, it's more of places like Walworth County, Rock County, close to the Illinois state line. When I look at Brood 13 periodical cicadas as a whole, yes, we have them in southern Wisconsin, but really the biggest numbers are going to be in northern Illinois. So if you wanted to see even more of them, go to Chicago area or other spots in northern Illinois. But not in Green Bay area. I've had folks say they're going to be in Sheboygan. Will they see them? Unfortunately, no. You'd have to drive from Green Bay area probably two and a half hours south to find them.
And what, as far as the mosquito population, PJ, any estimates for what we're going to be dealing with this summer?
Yeah, that's a good question. And usually this time of the year, I start getting that question. It can depend a lot on the weather that we get this spring. Now, last year was interesting. When you looked at Wisconsin's weather, the State Climatology Office has some charts on this. And we started 2013 much wetter than usual. But then once we got to spring, it was a complete yo-yo in the opposite direction. We ran dry for a couple months in the spring. Towards fall, it got rainy again, but then dry again. We know mosquitoes need moisture. They need water to develop. So even though in many areas it was dry during the spring and summer months, you still could see lots of mosquito activity. And one key reason for that was last year's snowpack. So right now we don't have a whole lot of snow anywhere in the state. But a year ago is very different. In some of the parts of northern Wisconsin, we're seeing 100 inches, 200 plus inches of snow. So what happens is that snow melted down. There are some mosquito species that are specifically adapted and evolved to take advantage of that temporary water. So if you go into the woods, there's just higher spots and lower spots. Those lower spots, water can pool there temporarily for maybe a couple weeks. That's enough for some of these mosquitoes to crank out a generation. And so northern Wisconsin, even though it was dry during the spring summer months, there were a lot of mosquitoes out. And I think it was because of that very heavy snowpack, took a while to melt, led to a lot of meltwater, and that was just feeding the mosquito story up there.
So this year we might actually, from what you're saying, because it has been, we haven't had a lot of snow, it's been pretty dry. At least at this point, maybe it will not be as terrible?
Well, potentially. What it, I think will be a big factor is what is our weather like for the next 3-4 months? If we have very little snow this year, things stay dry, mosquito numbers very well could be down. If we have a really rainy spring, then look out, you know, across the board, we could see a lot of mosquito activity. So it's really, really hard to tell at this point. And you really have to see what does the spring weather hold in store for us.
PJ Leash is our guest. He is the head of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at UW-Madison, also known as the Bug Guy. It's been a very, very, very warm winter. PJ, anything else that we can expect that might be unusual because we didn't really have a long period of a hard freeze? Any, I don't know, huge poisonous spiders going to be moving up from, you know, southern Florida?
Or some nice bugs show up? Why do they always have to be a horror show for you?
I'm a worst case scenario person.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And a few things come to mind. So in Wisconsin, we've got somewhere in the ballpark of about 20,000 insect species. We have plenty that are native here. We have some that aren't native, some that are maybe native to other parts of the U.S. and are just kind of maybe pushing their way into Wisconsin over time. We have insects that are in the state now that 50, 60 years ago, we just didn't really have.
Yeah.
And so with changing climate, milder winter, some of those insects will probably be pushing their way farther north over time. One example, which we see in southeastern Wisconsin, is a creature called a carpenter bee, which looks kind of like a bumblebee, but they will drill into soft wood like pine and cedar for their nest. We have praying mantids, which aren't native. There's a Chinese and a European mantis. Those are better suited for warmer climates, but over time, especially after a mild winter, they can push northward in the state and see more of those. So I'm expecting some things like that, but really every year, it's kind of like that Forrest Gump's box of chocolate. You just never quite know what you're going to get.
Oh, don't worry. Anything we get for Jane is going to be terrible.
I'm bug suspicious. What can I say? PJ Leash, it's always such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so very, very much. PJ Leash is the head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. We call him the Bug Guy. Thanks a lot, PJ. Take care and stay safe out there. You never know. They're coming for you. God. We have news. We have news coming up next. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. But I still kind of hate them. I'm so sick of cicadas. Makes me want to take a vacation, pack up the kids and go to Grenada. I'm so sick of cicadas. Stay under.
bless their hearts. I'm so sick of cicadas, a little freaked out, a little afraid. I know they're not as bad as Al-Qaeda, but I still kind of hate them. I'm so sick of cicadas, makes me want to take a vacation, pack up the kids and go to Grenada. And I'm so sick of cicadas.
Sure, they're really nice, and I know they've got lots of friends, and I don't mean to be a cicada hater. I'm really, I'm a gentle person, but they're just kind of gross. So I think it's maybe time to go back down underground, and it's all good.